And I think the one thing that separates us all is what's between our ears. I think that, you know, the mind games that are played, you know, in any event, whether that be a marathon, whether it be an ultra marathon or, you know, whatever the type, I think that it's all about what we focus on.
Welcome to the Runners Connect Run to the Top podcast, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. So together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now, here's your host, Tina Muir.
Hello, this is Tina Muir. Thank you for joining me for the latest episode of the Run to the Top podcast, brought to you by Runners Connect. Last week, we talked to Tawny Prazak, the host of Endurance Planet, and she told us about how she found balance in her busy life. If you are someone like me who tends to cram in too much, that was an episode for you, so make sure you go back and check it out. Today, we're talking to Trent Morrow. He's the world record holder for the most marathons on 7 continents in 1 year. He's also the Australian record holder for the most marathons in a year, which is 161, which he did in 2013. And currently, he's actually run over 300 marathons. But Trent has more to offer than just world records. You asked for more everyday runners, and Trent is exactly that. He started off by losing 70 pounds, having never been a runner before. His story is going to resonate with a lot of you, and how he describes what he hopes to do in the future through inspiring others is sure to leave you with a big smile on your face. So we're about to meet our world record holder after a quick word from our sponsor. Running with music or podcasts distract us when those mental demons are loud, but not when you're tangled in cords. Jabra Pulse is a wireless sports earbud that is perfect for runners of all levels and speed. Visit jabra.com/runnersconnect to enter to win a free Jabra Pulse every month. Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast, Trent.
Great to be here, Tina. Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming on. So you obviously have completed many more marathons than most people listening, although maybe someone somewhere in the grand total has accomplished more. But for the most part, I'm sure most people, their kind of mind is blown by the amount of marathons and races you've done. But you weren't always into, you know, racing and kind of getting yourself fit. So can you tell us, share maybe that moment in 2006 when you realized something had to change in your life?
Sure. So I went to my niece's christening, and as part of the process, you all have family pictures towards the end, and I vividly recall seeing that image and not recognizing the person that I'd become. I'd basically been working in a quite high-stressed role in a national sales capacity within the pharmaceutical industry, and as happens, basically had lost a little focus on my own health, and had been working ridiculous hours and really not having a great balance in my life at the time, and had as a consequence managed to pile on the best part of 70 pounds. So it was that moment which happened to coincide with New Year's resolutions leading into 2007, where I basically had a personal commitment to myself that I would find a way, whatever it took, to lose the weight and to get healthy again and put me as number one. So went about a process where I looked at a number of different options and basically did a bit of a trial and error when it came to changing diet a number of times, and then went about including some aerobic activity and was thankful enough to lose the weight and start the journey towards the marathon back in 2007.
Yeah, that's great. And I think it was important that you had that moment, like you said, based on a photograph, as that's often what kind of sets in the reality for us. Like you said, you know, things kind of get away from us and it's so easy to just, you know, ignore the mirror. You get so used to seeing your reflection, but that photograph was that moment for you. But do you think a lot of people have that moment, but they kind of see it as, oh, well, it's too late now, and then just keep going? Or so why do you think you were different, that it kind of was like, that's it, I've had enough of this?
Yeah, look, I think that there's that moment of realization, and looking back, there were those subtle hints, whether it be from work colleagues or whether it be from other friends, that make make certain jibes in relation to your weight, and you sort of you get to that resignation phase where you're almost so overwhelmed and so stressed and so much, you know, focused on the here and now, whatever that may be, whether that be with the job, whether that be with family, whatever it be, you know, relationship wise. And quite often, you know, I'm sure parents can understand this as well, when, you know, there's that moment that, you know, you lose sight of who you are, and you're more focused on looking after the kids, or, you know, working out where the next dollar's coming from to pay the bills. And as a consequence, quite often the thing that gives is your health and your fitness. And that certainly was the case for me. I know that going back and combining the sort of full-time work role with also studying towards a master's degree, and then also playing rugby, which I did back in the day, it's just not realistic to do everything. And I think that I've always been somebody that is not the best multitasker. And given one task, I think that I can do very well at that. But when you're having to do multiple things and trying to excel in all those capacities, it can be a real stretch sometimes. And quite often, you know, you do the best at what you can and focus on those areas that you can. And unfortunately, back in the day, the one thing that gave for me was initially the sports. So I focused more on the studies and the work. And then, you know, as a consequence, giving up that activity sort of then translated into basically, you know, finding that at the end of the day, you're exhausted. And the first thing that you sort of have a pattern of doing is eating and relaxing and watching TV, and then getting back up and going and living the stressed work corporate world environment that we often do. So, I mean, that was my journey, and certainly a great learning in terms of what's important to me in my future and what I really wanted to embrace moving forward.
Mm-hmm. And how did you kind of make it a point to make that a priority again for you? I think you're right that a lot of people, it's too easy for that one to be the one that goes if someone's stressed, and they forget, you know, how good you feel when you get back from a run, that time you take away is worth it. But what would you say is the, would you like to tell someone, I guess, who may be struggling with that right now, thinking, I'm just too busy?
Yeah, look, I think it's not an easy journey. It's certainly something that you can try and do it on your own. And I'm sure a lot of people out there may have sort of given it a try for a little while. And, you know, this time of year is certainly a perfect time of year when we're talking about New Year's resolutions as to, you know, at this time of year, have they been able to sort of, number one, stick with them? Because I think after a few weeks, quite often we've got the best intentions, but again, we can sort of get lost in our day-to-day activities, and those best plans can go off track. So I think it really comes back to how much do you want it, how important is it to you, and then sharing it with people as well. I think that if you take it on yourself as a goal, then that's obviously the first starting point. But if you keep it to yourself and don't have anybody to hold you account, then it's very easy to start something and stop something, and, you know, that resolution passed by and we're into February, March, April, and it was one of those, you know, good to sort of have as an ambition back in December, January, but then, you know, time passes by and we forget all about it, probably until, you know, 12 months later. So it's one of those things that I think certainly when I embarked on the challenge back in the day, I actually sort of looked, as I say, from a healthy eating point of view to see what groups were out there, what options I had. Certainly first time, second time, even third time, it wasn't perfect. I had to keep looking to find what was suitable for me. And I'm certainly not going to sit here today and start saying, well, this worked for me, so that's going to work for everybody, because that's just not reality. I think it really comes back to saying, who are you? What is your lifestyle? What is important to you? And what can you do to fit it into your structured environment today to make you get the best results?
Oh, absolutely. Great advice there. That really was helpful. And I think it's good for people to see that You know, this wasn't something that was with you your whole life. You struggled with it. And like you said, you gave it up a few times. You tried different things that didn't work. And let's talk about that a little bit more then. You began with the diet. You realized that's important. And I'm curious as to why you started with the diet when most people think, oh, I'm going to start running to lose weight. But why was it diet that you put as a priority?
Yeah, quite simply, I think that, you know, having known what it's like to be fit and to be healthy and to be able to run, at the time, as I say, it was best part of 70 pounds that I was carrying. So I just physically wasn't in that state or the shape to be able to get the results that I wanted. So as part of that learning process, as part of that, you know, transition to getting the results that I needed, I think that certainly in the early days, it's much better to do some form of cardio and aerobic activity. So whether that be, you know, walking around the block or whether it be, you know, going for a walk, in my case, I found that I actually preferred going to the gym, doing something on my own and doing it on a regular and consistent basis. So whether that be morning and night or whether that be every morning or longer stages over the weekend. So as we do with a training plan for a marathon or any event that we're looking for, you generally do some activity which is shorter during the week, but then you sort of ramp it up and do your longer runs on the weekend. Well, it was a little bit of the same approach for me in these early days where I did quite a lot of elliptical machine work during the week and then also embraced and found a new love for the spin class, which I really hadn't done all that much before. And I found that I really got into that and enjoyed the class that I found and kept going back. And really, really that does burn a lot of calories. And it was a really, really great way to do a short and intense workout.
Mm-hmm. Great. Yeah. And I think that's interesting that you did, you know, start that way with other forms of exercise until your body was ready to start running. And you mentioned earlier about you did the same thing with diets. You kept trying out different things and until you found what works for you, which was very important. And I think it's too easy for us as runners to say, you know, have a friend that says, oh, what do you do for this? And then you give them your answer, but it's not necessarily going to work for them. So it's great that you found your own path. And then, so you did begin running, but obviously, you know, you started from scratch. And so I'm just curious, you know, was doing a marathon always in your mind? Like, you know, someday I want to do it? Or was it just kind of first you wanted to do a 5K and then you thought you'd be happy with a 5K and then you thought you'd do a 10K and you thought you'd be happy with the 10K? How did it kind of come together for you?
Yeah, look, it was one of those things, I guess, that, you know, everyone has on their bucket list that it would be nice to run a marathon one day. And originally living in Sydney, it was leading up to the 2000 Olympics. And I vividly recall, this is well before I'd ever conceived of running a marathon, but I remember driving around and seeing the course marked out for the Olympics. And I must have been in the car driving for, you know, the best part of half an hour and seeing these kilometer markings for the marathon. And I just felt like it went on and on forever. And I thought, how could anyone ever run that far? And I thought, wouldn't that be great to say that I'd done that one day? And who would have known that I'd soon be approaching more than 300 marathons? So in a relatively short period of time. But yeah, that was probably the first memory I have of actually putting the marathon on the bucket list. Certainly had at that time an incredible respect for people that could run the distance, and nothing's changed, let me tell you.
And so when you were kind of building up through that stage, even though that, you know, little seed was in the back of your mind, how did you approach your training or approach, you know, these races that were coming up? As I'm guessing you did do other shorter distances along your journey.
Yes. So as my story goes, I don't do anything by halves. So the way it actually started was back in 2007, after doing the cardio and dropping some weight. I'd actually signed up to do the half marathon in September.
Oh, wow.
In Sydney in 2007. So that was my first real physical challenge to see how my progress was going. And I guess with the sort of very limited outdoor running experience that I'd had, with the majority of it being sort of gym-based, I'd done probably no more than, you know, best part of 5 kilometers training, and then lined up for this half marathon in September, and went out, and really the competitive juices back from the rugby days really sort of kicked in. Mm-hmm. and thankfully I was able to cross the finish line in around an hour 51, which,
wow, that's,
you know,
great.
looking back, I was absolutely rapt with, but you know, it was also the consequence of that limited running training was that I could hardly walk after it, and it was in all sorts of pain. But it just goes from there that, you know, within a week I'd actually been looking to sort of find something which was the ultimate physical challenge, having gone through the journey that I'd gone through with the weight loss and then being able to complete the half marathon. A few years earlier, I had a friend mention to me that if you ever really wanted to test yourself, you should take on the ultimate physical challenge, and that being an event over 250 kilometres or the best part of 156 miles through the Sahara Desert over 6 days, which is a totally self-sufficient race known as the Marathon de Sable, or the Marathon mm-hmm. of the Sands, through Morocco. So somehow, or for some crazy reason, within the space of the next week or two, I found myself signing up to do this race the following year.
Within a week of the half marathon?
Correct. Wow. Yes. So it's all gone out of control since then, really. And I guess what it comes back to is that, you know, whilst it all started with the weight loss journey, there's so many analogies and so many similarities that I could, you know, relate to the marathon journey as well, because mm-hmm. it's all about setting a goal. It's all about, you know, having something to focus on. And I think we can all appreciate that in, you know, every area of life, that, you know, no matter what it is, it's all about, you know, improving yourself and having something to focus on that is going to inspire us to move forward, whether that be, you know, the Olympic trials and then sort of bigger picture, the Olympics, or for the majority of us that aren't sort of at that end of the elite spectrum, it's about, you know, finding a goal, whether that be a 5K or 10K or half marathon or a marathon. And, you know, once you complete that goal, it's nice to wrap yourself and to give yourself a pat on the back, but it's like, okay, now what? Now what? Now what? And, you know, in the early days of, you know, getting across the Sahara and going out to the desert, I'll always vividly remember being in that environment where here I am, a total newbie to the running scene, and you've got all these people lining up on the start line to do what for me was this biggest challenge of my life, and many people questioned whether I'd survive, let alone be able to complete it. And people are standing around saying, "So what's next for you? What event's next for you?" And I had to laugh and think to myself, these crazy runners, what are they doing? What world is this where they're already talking about their next event in another week or another month or something like that? Let's just get through this first, focus on that, and then perhaps we can look at doing something next. And, you know, I now get it, obviously, being mm-hmm. in the world of running and knowing what the environment's like, that you do need to have these plans as to where you're going next. At the same time, though, I think that it's really important to be present in the here and the now to really make sure that you can do what you're there to do in the present, and then worry about, you know, your schedule and what's coming up next later. So if you don't get across the finish line that you're signed up to do today, then, you know, it really doesn't matter about what's coming up next week or next month. It's really about, you know, making sure you can achieve what you'd set out to achieve in the here and now, and then having the faith and the confidence that the rest will take care of itself.
Absolutely. And then what about, so if someone does take on like a challenge like this, and like you said, they don't complete it now, do you have any advice for, you know, not getting disheartened, or would you say to sign up for something straight away or to kind of take some time to reflect and go back to it another time?
Sure. Obviously, we all have our disappointments in whatever area we're looking at. And I think that when we don't achieve what we'd set out to achieve, it's important not to get disheartened about it, but to reflect on it. And hopefully there's no injury that's, too damaging. Certainly that does happen sometimes where it's a matter of taking the time out and recovering, not only physically, but also mentally. Mm-hmm. And that's not about beating yourself up over it. It's a matter of saying, okay, well, look, this is something that we can learn from. What can I do better to be stronger next time around? And yes, certainly it's about having a new focus. Now, whether it's a matter of signing up straight away or whether it's a matter of researching and finding something that inspires you, I think, for me, I've done a number of events on a repeated basis, year in, year out, and it's always nice to return to those locations. But I think it's also really rewarding to have those new experiences. Sometimes those experiences won't be all that you thought they would be, but then other times they'll just be, out of this world and so amazing. And that's something that I've been fortunate enough to have experience now across all seven continents and around the world. And I'm very, very proud of what I've been able to achieve over the last few years. And I think that, it's about finding something that inspires and excites you, because no two people are the same. It's great if you've got people to share it with, whether they're running with you or whether they're there to support you. I think that it's a journey that is better shared with others. And that's something that's important to me.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, great advice. And would you say the way you did it, like jumping in right at the deep end, going straight for that marathon de Saab and 250K distance straight away? Would you encourage others to do it that way, or is that just something again? You have to kind of feel whether it's right for you or not. Would you?
Look, I'm proof that it can be done. Mm-hmm. I think that, as I say, the running community and the other hardcore runners that I was out with certainly questioned whether I would be able to do it. Those that were not even runners questioned whether I would be able to do it. And, that is always in the back of your mind. It's always giving you something to prove. Mm-hmm. It's always, those doubters that say that we can't do something that, inspire us to go out there and do even more and make sure that we can show them, even though at the end of the day, it is a journey of one, where we're basically having to do the best that we can for ourselves. It's always nice and a little rewarding when we can sort of go back to people and say, there we go. I wouldn't necessarily recommend it. Everybody has to run their own journey. It's something that, a few people have since done something as crazy, certainly not running a marathon distance before and then taking on your first marathon. And I think on, day four through the Sahara is a little bit of a different way to experience a marathon.
Could say that.
it was great for me, and it was an amazing journey interestingly, looking back, family and friends thought that once I'd done that would then be out of my system. Little did they know that realistically that was just lighting a fire for much bigger things to come.
Which is often the case with runners. As much as non-runners can kind of hope that it does work out that way, it usually you're good evidence that it doesn't go like
exactly.
That.
Exactly.
And then can you just kind of share some of the experience of what that was like, especially as a new runner, without having all those expectations or knowing kind of almost like what the pain would be like? Can you kind of share a bit of your memories from that experience?
Sure. Look, I think that, as I say, it was a totally self-sufficient race. So not only did I have to worry about, the physical preparation, which realistically you can never 100% cover off those environments, especially living in Australia. And whilst the weather is a little bit warmer back in the day in the lead up to that, as opposed to training through winter here in the US, it was certainly certainly challenging to get the sort of sand work in, the preparation, you know, was potentially far from ideal. At the same time, you've got to, you know, not get too daunted by the preparation and, you know, having all the essential equipment. And, you know, for me, I was sort of hearing every way I turned that, you know, previous people had got lost and had died and, you know, faced with all these most horrific stories that, you know, were so confronting that, you know, rather than, you know, packing light, I would have preferred to have packed the kitchen sink. And I vividly remember turning up there where, you know, you've got the experienced runners that have done, you know, years preparation to be at this event. And I've turned up, you know, this new kid on the block, you know, with most sort of things to make sure that I'd sort of covered everything off, and I'd probably packed for three. So it was quite amusing looking back in terms of trying to get myself organized prior to the start line. And I mean, the night before we were about to start, and just going back to those naysayers and doubters, I was in the tent, and we shared a tent with, you know, another six or so people, and just before we're about to leave, I had a guy call me out literally in front of everybody else within the tent. And here we are with some experienced runners that have been running for years. And this guy said to me, "So Trent, here you are. You've never run a marathon before. What makes you think that you can even finish this?" And, you know, I'd not really known this guy for more than a few hours. And he had the gall to say this to me, and I thought, wow, you know, that's probably what a lot of people have been thinking, but just hadn't had the courage to say. And it really was that crystallizing factor that I was going to be in the tent with this guy for the next week. And not only did, you know, I personally, up until that stage, have no doubt that I would do it, even though you're not really sure of what you're about to face and what challenges are ahead, It was that added motivation that I probably needed to say, okay, well, you know, whatever it takes, I'm going to make sure that I finish this and do the very best that I can. And, you know, on, I think, day three, I mean, this same guy turned around and said, "Look, really impressed, credit to you. I didn't think you'd be able to do this, but you're proving us all wrong." So, I mean, that was sort of, looking back, something that was really rewarding and certainly probably inspired me along the way, you know, not just in that particular event, but over the years ahead as well.
Mm-hmm. And would you also say, I mean, I think that's a very common situation for, you know, maybe it might be a loved one or just like you said, someone else in the race, but would you say at any point you did use it for motivation most of the time, but were there any moments where it kind of worked against you, where you had to, it was almost your mind was the one that was being that naysayer and saying, "He said you can't do this and you can't, it's too hard," and then you nearly gave up, but somehow you fought through? Or did that always just work as motivation for you?
Yeah, I think the one thing that you can't really sort of predict is what your body's going to do. And that was probably in the back of my mind, with the heat being, you know, the best part of 120 plus, 50 degrees or so Celsius. And, you know, going over rock salt flat beds, feeling like you were literally cooking in an oven, going up some ridiculous mountain dunes, sinking into those mountain dunes over and over, climbing over, you know, mountainous ranges. And, you know, the terrain was just out of this world. And, I mean, majority of the time you're very much on your own. So I think that, like I say, there's never any guarantees that your body is going to hold out in those conditions, whether it be, you know, at an event such as that, or whether it be at a, you know, a smaller event. I think that it's always that sort of factor that you do the very best you can on the given day. And I think the one thing that separates us all is what's between our ears. Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, the mind games that are played, you know, in any event, whether that be a marathon, whether it be an ultra marathon, or, you know, whatever the type, I think that it's all about what we focus on. And that's where it comes back to having the right circle of influence mm-hmm. and having the right people within our worlds that are supporting us and reassuring us and making sure that we've got those right messages to empower us when we need it the most.
Absolutely.
I think that it's about the positive talk. It's about the ability to be able to dig deep mentally mm-hmm. as well as physically when you need it the most. And really that comes back to who we hang out with, who we train with, who our friends are, who our family are, mm-hmm. who we decide to spend the majority of our time with is a real reflection on how successful we are at the end of the day.
Very true. And like they say, you become a combination of the five people you spend the most time with. And I think that's great proof of that. Okay,
for sure.
So moving on, you did that race. You kind of proved everyone wrong and you started to race marathons more often. Well, that's putting it lightly, I guess. But how do you manage to stay healthy with these races, like, you know, back to back and week after week? How do you keep yourself injury free?
Yeah, so I guess fast forwarding from the finish line in Morocco and getting across that line back in 2008, it then sort of lit a fire for me to take on the 26.2 mile distance in other locations. And I'd always had a passion for travel and had been fortunate enough to live in Europe for a little while and travel for 3 months through Europe, which was phenomenal. And then, you know, there was this realization that I could combine, you know, the best of both worlds. And that's in terms of, you know, having a passion for running and fitness and health with also seeing the world. So later on in 2008, I was fortunate enough to be able to get a start in the New York Marathon. And as it turns out, with the flight from Australia, it was the same cost to do a round-the-world flight as it would have been to fly direct from Sydney to New York return. So I managed to run marathons back in Australia in Sydney and Melbourne, and then looked as quite often you do, certainly when it comes to any travel plans now, is to look to see what relevant races are on at the time or the window that you're looking.
Mm-hmm.
So travelled from Sydney to run in Amsterdam in Holland, and then across to run a few days later in Dublin, and then over to New York, where I ran there before finishing that up in the home of the marathon in Athens. So that was a great journey of six marathons in 6 weeks in 2008. And then, you know, doing that, basically went back to Sydney and then combined a number of marathons in 2009, 2010, 2011, 2012. But nothing, you know, ridiculous. It was generally paced out, sort of, you know, probably, you know, less than a marathon a month in general. So, but it was still, you know, a good journey, a good learning experience in terms of what was important to me, and, you know, combining that travel with the running and being fit as well. So the body adjusts. I found that, you know, not only is the mind important, but the more marathons you do, the more your body builds up this resilience to pain.
Mm-hmm.
So that was certainly the case back in those days. And then the journey really took off on a whole another tangent in late 2012, when unfortunately I had some distressing news talking to my stepmom, who was based in Phoenix in Arizona, and she revealed to me that she'd been diagnosed with terminal lung cancer. And there was that moment where, working back in the pharmaceutical industry, I had this wake-up call where I said to myself, do I really want to be sitting at a desk-bound job for the rest of my life, or do I want to take on something, you know, out of this world? And also, importantly, share the final days with my stepmom in Phoenix, which, you know, thankfully I was able to do before she sadly passed in March of 2013. So it was in a very short period of time that I decided that I was going to take on this audacious attempt to run the most marathons across seven continents in a year, and basically on very short notice embarked on flying across the US and then setting out from the start of January 2013 to what in essence, all up was 200 marathons across a period of 16 months across seven continents all around the world, with some of the most incredible logistics you'll ever imagine, getting from official race start to official race start. So it was a real challenge of a lifetime, and there were many moments where I didn't know if I'd be able to keep going, because I certainly didn't have any financial security or backing to do this. And it was a day-by-day survival story, just literally to keep going and to chase down a dream.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's very inspiring. And I mean, the whole story from, you know, when you first mentioned about, you know, jumping from that Sahara race into more marathons and doing it for your stepmom. And why was it this challenge in particular that you felt was significant or like important to do kind of for her, or like why was this the challenge you decided to make rather than just, you know, I want to help people, you know, work in a hospital or something like this? Why was this your calling, did you feel?
A few reasons. So not only was it important to me to spend and share some time with my stepmom, but it was also the 20th anniversary from the passing of my own mum from colon cancer. So that was something that, you know, for me, it really lined up with a story that I wanted to not only sort of remember both ladies that were very important to me in life, but it was also important to inspire others going through similar journeys. And then on top of that, show what was possible, because like I was getting at earlier, there's been many people that doubt and believe that you can do anything. And that certainly was one of the challenges going and, you know, taking on what I did, that, you know, from the start to during to after, there have been many people that, you know, doubted whether I'd be able to do something on that scale. And, you know, fair call. I mean, it's certainly not a small challenge to take on. And reality is, no one had ever decided to do something on this scale before. There's certainly been a number of people, you know, that have run a number of marathons, but certainly not, you know, at this level of official marathons across all seven continents over such a period. So, and importantly for me, it was about sharing the message with more people than ever before. You know, I think that a lot of people, you know, whether it be running across the US or whether it be, you know, going on solo adventures, I mean, that to me is just a whole nother level. That you look at that and the solitude and the journey that you take on to do on that scale is out of this world. But I really wanted to connect with more people than ever before, whether that be at, you know, the larger races or the smaller races, and hopefully, you know, not only share the journey with those running, but also those that are spectators, and, you know, give them some confidence and belief that, you know, potentially if they wanted to lace up the shoes, they could be there in 12 months' time. And that's a message that I still passionately believe in, and really believe that, you know, running is just not for the elite athlete. It's not for those that, you know, want to dedicate their life and do it every day. It's something that we can all do it, no matter what age or phase of life that we're in. It's one of the best, you know, stress relievers. It's one of the best, you know, not only for weight loss, but, you know, it's such an amazing journey that anyone can share with lacing up the shoes and walking out the door, and, you know, not necessarily going and taking on a 5 mile, 10 mile, you know, 26 mile training run, but, you know, it might be running to the mailbox. It might be, you know, running around the corner. It's just a matter of having a start and believing in yourself and having a bigger picture as to where you want to take it.
Yeah, that's great. And I'm sure you've inspired a lot of people who are listening right now, you know, kind of have been maybe staying within their comfort zone and thinking, you know, maybe I can do this. And I'm guessing along your journey, meeting all these new people, you know, out there doing their own thing, you kind of what inspired yourself, as I love listening to different runners' story and their journey of where they've come. And I'm guessing, like, all over the world, you met all kinds of people that had these fantastic stories.
Sure. And I guess one of the things that inspired me, and, you know, not only was it really important for me to be able to share the message, certainly on Facebook, but other social media outlets, which made a huge world of difference. And I can only imagine doing something on this scale, you know, before social media, when you didn't have that daily interaction with people around the globe. It certainly would have been a lot harder with postcards, or because they wouldn't have been able to track me down in the one place for very long. So it was actually a really critical component of what I was doing. It was about, you know, having that new mindset and that new focus to keep going each day and taking on these new adventures when, you know, as I mentioned, the logistics often would mean that I'd had very limited amount of sleep, if any sleep at all, between races, which were, you know, certainly a challenge in itself. But one of the things that I was focused on was actually meeting people that had never run a marathon before or a half marathon before. And I would often film people when I found out it was their first marathons. And it was a really great way to connect and find out people's personal journeys to running a marathon. And it was something that gave me a real lift to understand and find out where people were coming from and what their journeys were. And they were so diverse. And there was so many stories of, you know, inspiration, whether that be, you know, personal weight loss, whether it be, you know, somebody recovering from, you know, a breakup or a, you know, domestic abuse, or, you know, a recovering alcoholic, for example, or, you know, even a recovering drug addict. I mean, there were so many inspiring stories that people shared with me that I was absolutely compelled by, that, you know, sharing the journey with those people felt to me like you were, you know, not only instant friends, but you were lifelong friends and you were part of a family. Mm-hmm. And that was really powerful, and certainly something that I'm looking forward to including in my book when I get a chance to bring that together.
Oh, fantastic. And I didn't actually know you were writing a book, so that's great to hear. And I'm sure everyone listening will be very excited for the release of that. And I know you've got quite a following on your Facebook page, which I will put links to on the show notes at runnersconnect.net/RC96. Some days we need all the motivation we can get to make sure we finish our workout or make it through that cross-training session, especially when we're trapped indoors. It has been well documented that running with music or a motivating podcast can help improve performance. But as much as I love the idea, I found myself getting frustrated with the cords getting in my way, or when they would rip out of the treadmill. Finally, I have a solution. Jabra Pulse is the sweat-proof, weatherproof, wireless sports earbud that is perfect for runners of all levels and speeds. Even better, it has an accurate in-ear heart rate monitor that quickly connects to your phone so you can ditch the chest strap. The earbuds will have a secure and comfortable fit thanks to the ability to customize the earpieces. Runners Connect listeners can get exclusive offers and enter to win a free Jabra Pulse headset by signing up at jabra.com/runnersconnect. That's jabra.com/runnersconnect to start your journey, or buy the Jabra Pulse at your local Best Buy. Jabra, this is where it starts. So what would you like to tell someone listening who maybe before this interview, maybe they've changed their mind by now, but before this interview thought they could never do something as bold or extraordinary as what you did? Like, what would you like to tell them right now?
Look, there's a number of things, and I think just to break it down, it's all about, you know, when would now be a good time? I think that we can all sort of choose our own journey in life, and it's a matter of what's important to you and when are you ready to step up and take action more than anything else, because at the end of the day, no one's going to do it for you. You've got to be the one that's responsible for the change to be ultimately successful. Mm-hmm. And the simple equation is, without any action, you get no result. So it's quite often said that talk is cheap. And for me, it was important to run the talk. And I think that, you know, we can all do it when we're ready to do it. Mm-hmm. So It's really important, as I say, to surround yourself with the very best people that are out there that will hold you to those new standards and keep pushing you harder than ever to achieve your goals. So I think that knowing that it's not going to be a perfect journey, knowing that there's going to be setbacks, and not to lose faith when that happens, to have that belief in your dreams and to focus not only on that big picture, but also the short and the medium goals to inspire you to go all the way, to have flexibility and learn that it's okay to, you know, to not get where we want to get to in that short term, but, you know, reassess and refocus and relax and know that, you know, things will come together in time. So, but importantly, it's really about finding that meaning and purpose to be able to drive harder each and every day. So share your dreams, share your goals. Please find me on Facebook and send me messages, because I'd be more than happy to keep in touch and hold you to account, and likewise you hold me to account. So it's a journey that is not over by completing one marathon. It's a journey that's not over by achieving one goal. It's like I said earlier, it's about not only achieving our short-term goals, but then refocusing and looking at what's next. And for me, it's important to, you know, be true to yourself and to have that faith and know that with a little discipline each day that we can achieve what we're looking to achieve. So that's the ultimate for me. It's about knowing that we can, you know, have what we want in life if we really want it bad enough.
Oh, yeah. What a great way to sum that up there. You really explained that clearly, and I think everyone should have been nodding their head along to that. And then do you have any specific advice for, you know, those moments you mentioned where it does get tough, or you know, you are about to lose faith? What did you tell yourself in those moments when you think you're not going to make it?
Yeah, as somebody said to me the other day, Trent, you're probably one of the most persistent people I've ever met. And I think that, you know, you do need to be persistent. I think that no matter what that goal is, I think it's about, you know, digging deep and, you know, reassessing and knowing that it's okay, you know, whether it be your diet, whether it be your running plan, whether it be, you know, an event that didn't go the way that you wanted. It's a matter of saying, okay, well, you know, what can I do different next time? Can I, you know, find somebody that I can talk to? Can I share with somebody online? Can I, you know, what do I need to do to be a better person? And that's ultimately, you know, if you haven't got that person in your world, whether that be your loved ones or your friends, it's about reaching out and doing a little bit of homework and finding out somebody that you can connect with that inspires you to be able to go to that next level. And that's what's important for me. I think that deep down, we all need to have that, you know, driven motivation within each of us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, hopefully those that are listening today, I've got a feeling that 99.9% of people already have that. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, part of the journey. Then it's just a matter of finding out what works for each one of us. What is going to, you know, give us the ability to, you know, get that PB, get that PR, to go out there and, you know, push ourselves harder to focus on what the next goals are, to find a way, because I fully believe that if you want it bad enough, you will find a way. It's just a matter of trying and trying and trying and knowing that it may not work the first time, may not work the second time, may not work the 50th time. But if you fully believe on it and you fully believe that that's really the direction that is important to you to head, then you will achieve it and you will not let anything stop you from achieving it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. So wise there. And, you know, that reminded me of actually an interview I did a few months ago, which people need to check out. And I will put a link in the show notes to the Dick Beardsley interview about never, ever giving up. And, you know, that kind of matches along very well with what you just said there, and just such great advice, and so very wise of you. So after, you know, over 300 marathons, 12 ultras and all these accomplishments, being known as a marathon man, what can you say is next in your future? I mean, where are you planning on going from here?
Great question. So for me, a lot of people look at my journey and find it very easy to get lost in the numbers. So as you mentioned, the official world record is for running 160 marathons across seven continents in 1 year. And as I said, 200 of those were spaced out over only a relatively short period of 16 months from the start of 2013 through to Boston of 2014. So the running is still very important to me. But the Marathon Man journey continues in another guise, but still within the same framework. So as part of the journey when I was running around the world, I actually fell in love with the US and fell in love with the people over here. And as a consequence, really wanted to find a way to be able to call the US home, which as people who have done the immigration thing anywhere around the world would be able to relate, is not the easiest journey. Yeah. And over the last year, I've been fortunate enough to be living in the US, to have the visa clearance, and we'll be soon focusing on going through the green card process. So importantly for me, it's about getting established. So effectively, I've been living out of a suitcase now since the end of 2012 in taking on this world record. And like I touched on earlier, if you want something bad enough, you'll find a way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is not the expected sort of life that I really have been choosing to live. Obviously back in Australia, I had a nice place to live, and it was not a bad part of the world to live in, but I really have been dedicated to calling the States home and to finding a way to setting myself up. So this year is all about, you know, finding that new location, finding a place to really be happy, and hopefully finding a partner over here, which, you know, I can start a new life with. And to look at, you know, continuing to share the story, to be able to find a way to write and share my book and share some of the adventures from the world record journey, and hopefully inspire a new generation to get out and keep moving and to put one foot in front of the other and be the very best versions of ourselves.
Mm-hmm. And I think that what you just said right there, in being someone who also went through that journey, I now have my green card, but it took me a good 9 years to actually get that in my hand. And I think it kind of shows how running is, you know, it is relevant to our life. It shows that life is, you know, those journey of ups and downs. But like you said, if you want it bad enough, you will find a way. And, you know, you've kind of set your goal that you would like to live in the US, and, you know, you're finding that way to do that. And you're doing it through inspiring others, which is one of the greatest gifts that anyone can give a person, is to inspire them and help them along their own journey. So I really think that's something that's special to you. And I hope our listeners out there do appreciate just how much Trent has done, and, you know, how much we want him here too. as much as I can't really say that, being not American myself, but I've been here, and, you know, I know how Americans act, and I think a lot of you listening will appreciate that. And those from outside, you know, you're going to be admired just for following your dream. So, Trent, those are all the main questions I have. I just wanted to ask you a few quick questions in the final kick round, which is, let's start with, what was your greatest advice you've ever been given?
The greatest advice I've ever been given would be to believe in yourself. I think that it's very simple advice, but I think that, you know, it's something that has always been important to me, that, you know, we'll always have people that are out there trying to bring us down or not supporting our journey. And I think that, you know, it's a matter of, you know, having that self-belief to be able to keep moving forward and putting one foot in front of the other to get a little bit closer to what our goal is.
I love that. I actually wear a momentum bracelet around my wrist every time I race. It says "Believe in yourself." So I love that quote. Okay. What would your favorite running book or blog be?
It would be the new book by Trent Morrow, Marathon Man, yet to be launched, yet to be titled. So that would be my favorite book. Look, I've read a number of books over the years, so I'm sure people are familiar with Dean Karnatz's and his 50 States book. Also, Lisa Tamati from New Zealand wrote a good book that I enjoyed as well. So there are a couple of books that I've enjoyed. I do enjoy a light read and a read that is compelling. So those have been two books that I found was an easy read about running adventures, which I've had a few of now myself as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. This is going to be a good one for you. What would you tell a brand new runner?
Well, I would say that be ready to hold on for the ride of your life. So it's interesting that, you know, you meet a lot of runners out there that, you know, whether it be running the marathon or whether it be doing shorter distances, and quite often running the marathon, you'll meet those people that will say, I'm one and done. You know, I'm going out there, I get across the 26.2 finish line and I'll never do it again, which I just laugh at because, you know, quite often you'll get people saying that in their 20s, which I think, yeah, right, okay, well, it may hurt a little bit today, but there'll be a time that later on you look back and you're so proud of yourself, so impressed with yourself, that there will be another time that you decide to lace up those shoes and get out there to take on another challenge. And and that's what, you know, for me, it's a real thrill to be able to share my stories and to be able to impart a little bit of knowledge as to, you know, what other opportunities are out there. And I think that, you know, having explored the world and seen a number of other cultures and, you know, having experienced a number of different locations around there, I have a real great sense in terms of what people are missing out on. And I think that a lot of runners in the US, and I totally get the reason why, don't look much further than those experiences across the 50 states. And the pure reason is because, I mean, number one, it's easier logistically to make it happen. And, I mean, it's so diverse to be able to get across and see so many amazing things in this country. Mm-hmm. But there is a whole new world out there of experiences to enjoy as well. And, you know, hopefully in time there'll be opportunities, whether it be with tour groups that I can be associated with or set up myself to be able to share the joys and experiences of international travel around the globe, running some amazing marathons.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Yep. Great advice. Okay. And as you've had a lot of experience with this, your favorite pre-race meal?
Very simple. Very, very easy. So my favorite pre-race meal, without a shadow of a doubt, is lasagna. So
interesting. Even if it's a morning race.
Well, sorry, pre-race meal. I just went
the night that's the before night before. Meal, so
that's,
okay,
that's my night before meal. So so that's, well, it's still important. So I'm sure there's a lot of others out there that probably have the same. Yeah. It's a tradition that I like to keep, but the quality sometimes is not all that great depending upon where you are. Mm-hmm. So pre-race meal. A little bit different to a lot of others. I generally like to go something light. So I won't get up at a ridiculous o'clock and get the toaster out and set off the fire alarms, which I've actually been at a race and had that experience before, not personally, but with others, setting off the hotel fire alarm at, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning when you're probably more inclined to sleep as late as you possibly can and eat a light breakfast beforehand. So whether that be something as simple as a power bar or a granola bar or a banana or you know, sometimes even a chocolate soy protein drink or something, those are generally for me my go-tos on race morning, as opposed to anything sort of too carb related or too heavy the morning of a race.
Okay. Thank you for sharing. And finally, your favorite running product?
Favorite running product? Well, I've got to say, being a size 15 for a shoe, it's extremely challenging to find the right shoes. So having run majority of my races for the world record in ASICS, I've now found that they don't work for me, and I'm now transitioned to Brooks. So, so they're probably my favorite shoes. I also wear compression, but most likely outside of my phone, which I do a lot of videoing and taking of photographs on during the race, I'd say I'd probably be lost without my watch. So I wear a Garmin and that keeps me in good stead in terms of knowing my splits to to be able to at least have an idea as to whether I'm on track for my own personal goals on that day.
Mm-hmm. Which Garmin model do you have?
The 620 is what I've got.
Okay, great. Yeah. All right. Well, Trent, thank you so much for your time, for your inspiration, for sharing your story. And I really hope everyone listening has enjoyed this interview just as much as I have. But I want to thank you for sharing and hope you have the best of luck with how things are going. Is there anything else you would like to add before we go?
Thanks so much, Jenna. I really, really appreciate the opportunity to catch up with you and your listeners today. So probably just like to leave you with a couple of questions for everybody out there that, you know, this will be something for you to, you know, take away and think about. And I think there are two questions that really resonated with me and were important to me in my journey and still to this point are something that, you know, I think about often. And that's, you know, firstly, what will be your legacy? What do you want people to remember you for? You know, so what is your own personal legacy? And then, you know, will you be a warning for others or a shining example? So, you know, they're just two little things that, you know, hopefully people can have a think about. And it's something that, you know, continues to, you know, I guess be an important part of my life that I think about in terms of, you know, my next steps and the direction I'm going on in life as well.
Thank you for sharing that. Fantastic. What is your legacy? That's a great way to end up. And thank you so much for everything today. That's been wonderful.
Great pleasure, Tina, and look forward to staying in touch and seeing many people across the country and around the world over the days ahead.
Yeah, definitely. What a fun discussion. Trent really gets it, and he just sees how much running brings to our lives other than the physical benefits. Those friendships and relationships with others are truly one of the most important parts. If you enjoyed today's episode, I would really appreciate if you'd consider giving us a review, which you can do by checking out the podcast page at runnersconnect.net/run-to-the-top, and I explain exactly how to do it right there. Next week, we're going to be talking to Tony and Ashley from Black Girls Run. They have a fantastic story of what they have done with their business, and you don't want to miss it. But until then, have a great week.